And if the parties are ready, we can move into our 10:30 matter, which is 55883, City of North Las Vegas versus Warburton. And I note, at least from the panel appearance memorandum that I have before me, that the parties are the same on both cases, so I presume no problem that we move from one case to the next, as I suggested?
We have no problem.
Very well. Mr. Swartz, on behalf of the appellant, City of North Las Vegas, do you wish to reserve time?
5 minutes, please, Your Honor.
And do you wish for me to interrupt you at that five-minute mark and remind you that you are at that marker?
That would be wonderful.
Thank you very much. Counsel, you may proceed.
This is a relatively unique case with some interesting facts. Unfortunately, when you look at the appeals officer's decision, you will see that those unusual facts really aren't mentioned. What we can glean from the appeals officer's decision, which is all of, I believe, three pages, is that Ms. Warburton worked for the City of North Las Vegas. In this particular case, we'll deal with this part of the issue in the second case, but in this particular case, she was a pool manager. There was a mandatory meeting for which she was excused. She went to the location of the mandatory meeting to pick up her paycheck and to pick up her new swimsuits for the new season that was coming. She left that facility. She's not completely sure where she was going. She believes she was going back to check on her pool that she was in charge of. And at some point on the way back, an accident, a terrible accident, happened. And the circumstantial evidence, this is the appeals officer's words, not mine, the circumstantial evidence supports the idea that she was going back to check on that pool. And so therefore, the claim is covered. We don't know what it's covered under. We don't know whether the argument was that this was a special errand. We don't know whether the argument was that this was the street risk doctrine. We really don't know any of those things because there's nothing in the decision to give us any guidance legally as to why this became a compensable claim. There are no cases cited whatsoever in the decision. And if you read the transcript, you'll see in the transcript that the cases that were argued at the time of that decision weren't actually argued, for the majority point, throughout the course of this claim. There was no mention in the decision of any of the cases that Nevada has that deal with the issues of the going and coming rule. The Murphy case obviously was not cited in the decision because it had not yet been issued, but the Murphy case deals with the street risk doctrine. So in order to deal with the Nevada cases we have to look beyond the decision to look at the facts. And as we've always been told, that's not the appropriate way to argue a case on appeal. But I want to go through very quickly the legal authority that was given in the briefs to support the compensability of this case. Each and every one of the cases that was argued, with the exception of the Bob Allen Masonry case, is a California case, each and every single one. And they all ultimately go back to what I'm pronouncing, I'm not sure if it's correct or not, the Schreifer case, which is a 1964 case, that held, as did the other cases, that California interprets workers' compensation liberally in favor of the injured worker. Statutorily, that is not what Nevada does. Our legislature decided in 1993 to draft a statute that said we do not interpret workers' compensation liberally in favor of the injured worker. Each and every one of those California cases either relies back on the Schreifer case, which is under that standard, or specifically mentions in the decision that we interpret workers' compensation liberally in favor of the injured worker. And in fact, one of the cases, the Safeway case, says if there's any reasonable doubt, it goes to the claimant. That is not Nevada's state of the law. Even if it were the state of the law, just again, quickly, the five cases that were cited. The Schreifer case...
Counsel... I mean, I don't think we need to get into debate about California law. I think the question here is whether there are exceptions under Nevada law that cover this claim.
And in answer to your question, I do not believe there are exceptions that cover this claim.
Fine. No, I'm just suggesting that maybe your time is better used addressing why these exceptions might not apply in this case.
The exceptions that are covered in the state of Nevada, which are dealt with in the cases we've cited, deal with someone who's on call. Ms. Warburton was not on call. Someone who is driving a company vehicle. Ms. Warburton was not driving a company vehicle. Someone who's paid for their travel time. Ms. Warburton was not paid for her travel time. Someone who is called in specifically to do something. Ms. Warburton was not called in specifically to do something on this particular occasion. what Ms. Warburton was doing on this particular occasion, even if you accept the circumstantial evidence, as the appeals officer called it, she had left the meeting that she was at. She had stopped being paid. She was no longer being compensated in any form whatsoever. And she decided, because her manager or her boss had at some point in time said, if you're in the area of the pools, can you look and see? Don't get out of your car. Don't do anything. If you see something unusual, call me or call the police. In his words, because he thought it was the right thing to ask to have people do. If you accept Ms. Warburton's version of the facts and the circumstantial evidence, she had left one pool.
Well, there's no dispute that the manager directed pool staff to check on the pools periodically, is there?
There's no dispute that the manager said, if you're in the area, uh-huh. check. He also said that, according to his transcript, to neighboring homeowners. If you happen to see something, please call me and call the police.
So the employees were under a directive from their manager to check on the pools periodically.
They were, if they were in the area, correct.
Okay, and would the city receive a benefit if that were to occur?
They would receive a benefit if the employee found something and called it in and it got fixed,
well,
yes.
Just by virtue of checking and seeing if there, because there was vandalism to these pools that they were concerned about knowing about and correcting, and even if they didn't find anything, isn't it a benefit to the employer that somebody's checking?
In fact,
yes.
Isn't it especially a benefit if nothing's going on, i.e. well, because of their presence?
If there was some argument that this caused a deterrent, then I would agree with your argument. If nothing's going on, people aren't doing things because they think the pools are being checked on.
Well, regardless, if the individual drives by the pool, doesn't get out of their car, looks at it, and drives away, at the time of that the individual drives up to the pool and they get into a collision, are they covered or not? And if not, why not?
If your question
is... I mean, I understand the facts of this case are you dispute the circumstances under which this individual was injured.
Correct.
The claimant in this case was injured, and whether she fell within the ambit of these instructions. But let's assume hypothetically that an individual, in response to the suggestion or request that you check on the pool, is in fact driving to the pool, gets into a collision. Why isn't that a covered claim?
The reason why it's not a covered claim is I cannot find any legal authority to say it's a covered claim. In this so broad a statement from the pool manager that if you happen to be in the area, please check, and that the underlying facts, not necessarily this case, but of all the testimony that we had, that if they didn't check, he didn't care. If they told him, I don't really want to check, he wasn't going to discipline them. He just made a statement, if you happen to be in the area, please check.
But that's a supervisor telling an employee to do something.
That's a supervisor suggesting to an employee that it would be the right thing to do as a not only an employee, but a citizen of that particular city. And if you read the transcript of the supervisor, whose name we all mangled the whole way through, so I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, Aaron was his first name, he indicated this was just being a good citizen of the city of North Las Vegas. If you happen to be in the area, take a look. Don't get out of your car. Don't pull up. Don't go check the gates. Just drive by. The dilemma that I have without having a case that says this.
Why wouldn't my hypothetical fall within the Bob Allen Masonry case?
The Bob Allen Masonry case is the street risk doctrine, the argument that we may have directed this individual from one place to another on that specific time, and in doing so, if he's exposed to the risk of the street, then it's a compensable claim. Mm-hmm. The problem is I've already asked the lower court to allow us to argue and establish facts mm-hmm. about how this falls into Bob Allen Masonry and was told mm-hmm. no. The Bob Allen Masonry case wasn't decided till after this case. No, when it was decided, we asked the lower court to allow us to establish some facts on that particular issue, just like
but
some
Bob
of the
Bob Allen Masonry is now case law.
Correct.
And so why shouldn't this court consider a remand for the purpose of having that evaluated?
I can't say you shouldn't because I actually have already asked for that, not from okay. this court, but from the district court.
Well, that's what I thought was the case.
So in answer to your question, in order for me to take our facts and put it into the Bob Allen Masonry case, I have to come up with other facts that aren't necessarily in the decision. And then we're going to be up here arguing a factual issue to you, to your honors, how we interpret some of the evidence that wasn't decided by the appeals officer, most importantly because the decision hadn't been issued yet. Mm-hmm. So I don't disagree with that position. I can try to make an argument about how we can cram these facts in if you'd like me to, but at the same time, I understand that it's not your role to say, okay, there's a new case, here's what the facts of the new case are. Try to establish your facts. If there were enough facts, maybe we could, but there just simply isn't. The decision's only 3 pages long.
Well, I understand its length and its brevity. Some have argued that maybe we need to find a way to find brevity in our opinions. But doesn't the determination by the officer here bring us awfully close to the hypothetical that I mentioned? Why aren't the facts as found by the appeals officer here, why don't they fit within Bob Allen Masonry?
Actually, for the very reason that the Bob Allen Masonry case didn't fit within Bob Allen Masonry and was a remand, a reversal on a remand, because we really didn't establish there are things in this decision that weren't important at the time we argued it because we didn't have the court's guidance on Bob Allen Masonry. What you have in this case is you, and I will take a couple seconds to try to cram this in, what you have in this case is the appeals officer saying because of some circumstantial evidence she was going to the pool. So in your hypothetical, you're saying it's not circumstantial. She's going to the pool. In the Bob Elementary case, we had no idea what happened about the accident. In this case, we know that she was going, at least she thought she was going to her pool. But when you look at the map and other things, there was plenty of arguments about that, but it wasn't particularly relevant because it wasn't the most important point like it would be in the Bob Elementary case.
Mr. Swartz, you are into your rebuttal time.
I will. If I answer your question, I'll reserve my time. If I haven't, I'll be happy to stay.
Well, we have added time. Maybe the presiding judge would extend this time a little bit since we're on this point. I hate to bifurcate it.
Certainly.
I'm just trying to understand what is it that you would seek in remand for the appeals officer to revisit factually when the Bob Allen Masonry case establishes the law in the state to govern this circumstance, at least one of the exceptions.
The most important thing I would seek, Your Honor, is a factual finding as to whether or not Ms. Warburton had actually left that pool to go back to the second pool, her old pool. Mm-hmm. What you have is you have it just on the four corners of the decision, the appeals officer saying that circumstantially that appears to be correct because she would not have been there in that particular location of the accident, but for going back to check on her pool. And when you look at the map and you listen to what Ms. Warburton's testimony was as to how she went from the rec center, we'll call it, the pool where the meeting was, home every single time versus the times that she left that rec center to go back to her pool, it's impossible. She talks about going down two streets that are perpendicular. It's going to be parallel. So she couldn't have gotten back to the pool under the directions that she was following. But the appeals officer didn't think that was the most important point because we didn't have Bob Allen Masonry yet. So what I would like from the appeals officer, even if it was in the form of argument, is more guidance on not whether there's circumstantial evidence. I mean, a check mark on a map, you have copies of the map. There's a check mark on the map. But if you read Ms. Warburton's testimony, she's the only one who testified as to the paths she would take. There's no way for her to get from the rec center to the pool following the path that she says she took. It's impossible. There's a street missing somewhere. I don't know what street is. It is physically impossible to get from point A to point B per her testimony without a street being missing. And I don't know what that street is.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. James Cox on behalf of the respondent and injured worker, Mallory Warburton. This is an appeal of a denial of a petition for judicial review of the Department of Administration Appeals Officer's decision. In this case and in such cases, the review before this court differs depending upon whether it's a legal argument or whether it's a factual findings. NRS 233B.135 specifically states that it is the burden of the attacking party or resisting a decision to show that it's invalid. What you've heard before you today is nothing that would establish such facts. Further, when you consider that all factual findings of appeals officer are given deference, that they're not disturbed unless there is a lack of substantial evidence. And substantial evidence has been described by this court to be that type of evidence, which a reasonable mind might accept is adequate to support a conclusion. It doesn't mean that the court would come to the same conclusion. It's just a matter of whether the evidence is sufficient that a reasonable person might accept it as adequate. In this case, you had 10 factual findings by the appeals officer. At any given point in time, the employer could have requested additional facts to be entered into the evidence or found by the appeals officer. Of those 10 facts, relatively 5 are not even in the remotest sense it's contested. As to the remaining 5, the arguments of the employer has been that Ms. Warburton wasn't required to go back to Hartkey School because she had been excused from a mandatory meeting. The mandatory meeting was just one aspect of the reason that the employees were going and the reason that the pool was closed early. The other reasons that Ms. Warburton had traveled over to Hartkey School was that she was there to pick up her paycheck. She was also there to pick up a required uniform for the following day. She was there to talk to her supervisor about scheduling issues. She'd been promoted to the position of a pool manager. She was there to get to talk to him about this. And so she went there for employment-related purposes. The appeals officer made that factual finding. And that factual finding, there's no basis to say that there's not substantial evidence to support it. Where she traveled from
where
there,
in the order does the officer identify the route that was taken by Ms. Warburton?
She doesn't specifically identify the route. To be honest with you, I don't know if any appeals officers' decisions that go into such detail. Unfortunately, they frequently do have brevity to them. But in this case, you have what she did find was that she specifically did make the finding that the claimant was traveling back to Walker Pool, and this is at 269 of the appellant's appendix, that she was traveling, and it's number 7, the claimant was traveling back to Walker Pool as she had done on several occasions to make sure that Walker Pool was secure as suggested by her supervisor. Conclusion or finding of fact number 10 states specifically, and this is the reason why a remand in this case wouldn't be warranted, is the issues, and I'll get to that in a minute, with regards to Bob Allen, and what additional findings could be gleaned are already found by the appeals officer. And this is the finding that at the time of the accident, claimant was traveling to Walker Pool and had not commenced travel to her home. The evidence is circumstantial, however, it is persuasive. The route makes no sense otherwise. She made this factual finding based upon having a map that was presented into evidence, hearing testimony of that map. Ms. Warburton had provided information as to the occasions when she went to Hartkey Pool and drove directly home. On those occasions, she had come over to Lake Mead and go straight down Lake Mead to Rancho. On occasions where, just as she had done 2 days before, she went back by because it wasn't substantially out of the way, but it was somewhat out of the way. It was a different route that she would take to go back to Walker Pool. There had been a mandatory meeting 2 days prior, similar to the one she had been. She'd closed the pool early on that day. Following that, after she left the meeting, she drove back by Walker Pool. And this isn't anything that she did on specifically on her own. This was a direct request from her employer to, when you're in the area, to go by and check on the pools. This is a distinct benefit that the employer receives by having, it's unfortunate because the reason they're wanting their employees to check on these pools is because of the location of the pools aren't in the best areas of town. And so they're asking impressionable 18, 19-year-old lifeguards and pool managers to do the things and do it off the clock. And then when something happens, they don't want to be responsible for it. Ms. Warburton had been promoted to pool manager because of the outstanding leadership and responsibility that their supervisor found. So when he told her, when you're in the area, go check on the pools, it wasn't a question really as to whether she was going to do it. He knew she would do it. There was evidence, there was testimony by Ms. Warburton's father that on a previous occasion, when she had done such a thing, she had called Mr. The supervisor, and it advised him that, you know, there was a hole in the fence. While he doesn't recollect that, he says it absolutely could have happened. This is when you look at the decision in order, again, each factual finding is supported by evidence, and you don't, there are three arguments under which this is a valid claim. First is that the coming and going, or going coming rule doesn't even apply. Miss Warburton's place of employment was at Walker Pool. At Walker Pool, that is where her job duties were. Because she needed to pick up her paycheck, needed to pick up her uniform, needed to speak with her supervisor about scheduling issues, she drove to Hartke Pool. And then when that meeting and those things were concluded, she was driving back over to Walker Pool to check on it as it had been told to her. It's submitted that going and coming doesn't apply because she was never going and coming home. Everything that she did was in furtherance of employment-related activities. Employment-related in going to Hartke Pool and employment-related in going back to Walker Pool. And as the appeals officer stated in her order, and it's at appendix 2. It's the conclusion of law number 2 is that the claimant remained within the course of her employment both to and from Hartke Park, and her course of employment would have continued until she had driven by Walker Pool to check facilities. Thus, the factual findings in this case are that even though she may have been off the clock, she was still in furtherance of her employer's obligations, activities, and doing something for their benefit. There was also a specific factual finding that the employer received a distinct benefit from the pool managers and having them check on the facilities after hours. This brings you into a myriad of cases that have been decided in Nevada. While the actual issues may come down to whether they were on call or not, you have the case of Teague versus Metro, Evans versus Southwest Gas, and Bob Allen, all of which talk about when an employer receives a distinct benefit, it could fall under a going and coming rule. And would submit that under the facts and the factual findings of this case, you don't get to the going and coming rule and special exceptions or any type of exceptions, but if you do, she falls under one of those. And one of those is very, very much on point with Bob Allen. In Bob Allen, the employee was not on call. He was doing something that the employer had suggested, just like, or had requested, just like Ms. Warburton was. There was two issues in Bob Allen. It was not only whether or not there was the street risk. The other issue was whether or not, and the reason it was remanded, was there was insufficient evidence to find out his accident occurred after he'd made the delivery of the materials to the job site. And there was questions and factual issues as to whether he was on his own personal time or whether he was still continuing the obligations of the employer. That is not the facts in this case. There have already been factual findings by this appeals officer that Ms. Warburton was, in fact, going back to Walker Pool, and she was, in fact, covered under the course of her employment until she had passed Walker Pool. The cases, again, there's considerable more, and there's law in Nevada that deals with the issues that the appeals officer was confronted with. The appeals officer was aware of this court's decision in Teague, where it talks about it's a Metro case and it creates an exception for police officers, but it also talks about that where, and cites Evans versus Southwest Gas, that where the employer receives a distinct benefit, it falls outside the coming and going rule and is a separate exception. In this case, there is no, doesn't even come close to begin to show that there was not substantial evidence to support each of the factual findings of the appeals officer. When you look at those factual findings, while they could be more complete, they are sufficient to support the appeals officer's decision, and the decision being that Ms. Warburton was covered in the course of her employment at the time this accident happened. To hold otherwise would be to allow an employer to impose upon, have supervisors impose upon employees to conduct things in furtherance of their business outside the business hours and not have any responsibility for them. That is, even though you don't get paid, doesn't mean that you're not in the course of your employment. And so based upon the everything that's been submitted, unless the court has any further questions, we can submit it on that.
Just one, other than your client's testimony, were the circumstances of the accident presented to the appeals officer, that is to say, the direction of your client's vehicle on Cary?
It was, Your Honor. There was a traffic accident report was included in the record. I do not know it more than the traffic accident, but the traffic accident report was included, which identified the direction of the vehicles in question.
Showing that her vehicle was headed in the direction of Martin Luther King Boulevard from Commerce?
If you give me 1 second to find the map. At Appellant's 5 is the traffic accident report. Ms. Warburton's vehicle is identified on page 9, and the description of the accident is contained at, I believe it's 6, and it talks about how Vehicle 2 was traveling in the westbound number 1 lane, and that being on, I believe it was Cary. Didn't have to look at the map to have the specifics. Prior to the date, I mean, the appeals officer heard Ms. Warburton's testimony. She heard the testimony as to where she was going, what her typical routes were. Obviously, it was not an issue to her as to if there was an inconsistency in the testimony, and that wasn't argued, certainly wasn't argued in the opening brief or the responding brief. But if that, and for that reason, we'd submit it's not a proper argument for you today. But if there was a dispute as to that the appeals officer's factual finding was to decline to put place any substance on that, and which resulted in her finding that she was, in fact, on her way back to Walker Pool.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Mr. Schwartz, I'm going to add 2 minutes to your rebuttal time.
To address a couple things that were just said, if we didn't have the guidance of Bob Allen Masonry, why would there be arguments about the holding of Bob Allen Masonry? Your Honor asked the question about was it pointed out about the direction of her vehicle. It was never pointed out about the direction of her vehicle. You have the entire transcript of our arguments. That was not an issue because we didn't have the guidance of Bob Allen Masonry. What wasn't an issue was whether or not the
rule. Well, it may not have been argued, but the question now is whether substantial evidence exists in the record to affirm given Bob Allen Masonry.
Right.
And that got to my question earlier, what would a remand be necessary? And one would think the argument would be because there isn't substantial evidence in the record to support the conclusion under Bob Allen Masonry as to the street risk rule.
The only testimony we had about what Ms. Warburton's directional flow would have been when leaving Hartke Pool and going back to Walker Pool is on page 119 of the transcript. And if you look at 119 of the record, and if you look at page 49 of the record, which is the map, mm-hmm. It is physically impossible to follow the route that she has. There is no cross street given. There's no information as to how she's getting from Commerce to Martin Luther King. There's nothing. It wasn't relevant at the time because we didn't have the holding of Bob Allen Masonry. So no one asked her. We didn't look at the direction of the vehicle in that particular moment. We didn't look at the entire police report. None of that part was relevant.
There's no dispute that she's immediately prior to the accident, maybe immediately is an improper word, but I'll use it, she departed from Hartke Pool.
There's no dispute about that.
Okay.
That part was not disputed. Right. Where she went from that point onward was the dispute because we didn't have other case guidance at the time. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing I wanted to point out. The other thing, the decision is in the appendix at page 268, and I guess I'm a little confused as to how this very limited decision gives us all the information we need. And the legal conclusions of the appeals officer tell you that even under Bob Allen Masonry, she's incorrect legally. When you turn to page 270, which is the legal conclusions, the appeals officer says, the claimant remained within the course of her employment both to and from Hartke Park, and her course of employment would have continued until she had driven by Walker Pool. That's not the holding of Bob Allen Masonry. It doesn't. She's ending her course and scope of employment when she drives by the pool, not when she gets back home. So if Bob Allen Masonry is applicable, this part is wrong as well. And I only point that out to you because the appeals officer didn't know, actually none of us knew, about the street risk doctrine.
I understand that Bob Allen Masonry hadn't been decided, correct, but the street risk rule is pretty prevalent in Larson's and other treatises. Correct. It's not as if this was a doctrine that the Supreme Court pulled out of whole cloth.
I didn't think Your Honor did. My point is that none of us argued it because we didn't know that it was going to be adopted.
I understand, sure.
A couple other things that were pointed out. Finding a fact about the mandatory meeting and what she needed to go for and why. We're not arguing that had this accident happened between Walker Pool and Hartke Pool, this was not a compensable claim. It's not relevant to this case because it didn't happen in that way. There would be a whole different set of arguments as to whether or not her going to pick up her check and going to talk to her supervisor and going to pick up her swimsuit made that part of her employment day. But that's not when the accident happened. So when we make the statement that that means she's still covered, that means that we're all covered when we leave work. If we're going to adopt that ruling, if somebody has to go from point A to point B as part of their work duties, and then from point B home, they would be covered. That's not the point in the case. Not her trip from Walker to Hartke. It's what happened after Hartke. That's really the question in the case. And that's why we didn't argue. I mean, Mr. Cox is right. We didn't argue over whether, as he is now arguing, picking up check is a personal reason or not. We didn't argue about it. It's in the decision. I didn't feel a need to go back to the appeals officer and say, that's wrong. Couple other real quick things. If you read the Tide case, the Evans case, the Bob Allen Masonry case, the Crank case, any of the cases that this court has dealt with on the issue of the going and coming rule in this type of scenario, we do not have a single case that says just because there is solely a distinct benefit, it is covered. There is not a single case that says that. Each and every one of those cases has some other factor attached to it, be it a police officer, be it that they're paid, be it that they're on call, be it that they're driving a company vehicle, which is the Bob Allen Masonry facts. Bob Allen Masonry was also paid for his travel. There is a distinct additional factor in each and every one of those cases that deals with control. The control the employer has over that individual when that incident happens. We made Mr. Murphy come to work. We had control. We told him he had to. And the last thing I would point out is this decision doesn't say that she was ordered to go to these pools. It doesn't say it was mandated. It said it was suggested. And again, that's because we didn't know, or we didn't argue, I would say, the holding of the Murphy case. So this is distinct from Murphy. If you don't feel a remand is necessary, then the real question becomes, if the only connection to employment, again, we're assuming circumstantial evidence is enough, if the only connection to employment is that it was suggested and there's a benefit, that's more than what we have the holding in any of those other cases. And your original question was, why do you believe it's not covered in our factual scenario that you gave? Because I cannot find a single case that says, if that's the only fact pattern, the only issue, the benefit to the employer, then it's covered. That would mean when I went to get my suit at the dry cleaner Saturday, that was a benefit to my employer because I had to wear it here with you guys today. Why would that not be covered?
Thank you, Mr. Schwartz. This matter will stand submitted at the request of my colleagues. We're going to take a very brief recess. I would ask the parties not to go too far away from their table. We are not going to wait until 11:30 to reconvene. It'll just be a few minutes. Be right back.
All right.